Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we look at the second revolution in photography, one that has occurred so swiftly and completely that most of us have adopted it without much thought. Digital cameras was the first revolution. It began changing the nature of photography in the 1990s. In fact, today it's almost impossible to find film on store shelves. But within 10 years, the second revolution of digital camera phones have offered us new instantaneous ways to shoot, see, and share pictures. My guest today is British professional photographer Adam Bronkhorst, who has written a handy guide to help us take better pictures with our smartphones. It shows us the versatility of these phones when combined with the right apps. Bronkhorst is the author of Snapshots, that's with two P's, think of Snap with an app combined, How to Take Great Pictures with Smartphones and Apps. It offers tips on taking better pictures, on ways to edit and make good shots even better, and how to share your photography with others, as well as the wide range of attachments that can attach to your smartphone to offer everything from macro photography to wide-angle fisheye camera lenses and much more. He joins us today by phone. Adam Bronkhorst, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Rich.
We've lived through one revolution in photography, that from the era of film to digital photography. Now we're right in the midst of a new revolution from cameras to devices to take photographs. And that means everything from smartphones to tablets to, I don't know what they're going to come up with next week. But this is quite a revolution in photography, isn't it?
That's right. I think revolution is definitely the right word. The way that people are taking photos and the way that we're viewing photos and sharing photos has been revolutionized in the last couple of years. The fact that almost everyone with a modern phone nowadays has a camera in their pockets really has changed the way that we see the world. So when we see news, when news happens, we see it almost as it happens, rather than something happens and then the news desk has to send out a camera crew who have to drive sometimes overnight to get to there and they see the aftermath. We're seeing what is happening as it's happening. If you think about the plane landing on the Hudson River a couple of years ago, that was broadcast, the first images of that were put out on Twitter literally just after it happened, whereas to get a news team down there would have taken a little bit of time. So the fact that we've all got these cameras in our pockets really is revolutionizing everything.
And I think in many ways it's freeing to more fully document one's life, really.
Yeah, well, that's one of the tips, and one of the things that I think is really interesting is that, I mean, I'm a professional photographer, and I've always had a camera with me. Ever since I was about 13, I've always owned a camera, so I've effectively got my life documented from the age of 13. But not in a way that it was, I'm taking photos almost every single day now, and back in the days of film, a film might last you 2, 3, 6 months, whatever. Whereas now, I'm literally using my phone every day to document what's happening and then uploading it and sharing it and making connections with people and family and friends and people that I went to school with that I would have lost touch with elsewhere, actually keeping in touch with what I'm doing and seeing what's happening and seeing my kids grow up. It really is incredible.
You know, it's for a while we were looking at the fact that, you know, the movie cameras were becoming very easy, and many people thought that the art of the still photograph might be falling by the wayside, because at that point digital cameras were pretty expensive. Of course, now they've all gotten very cheap. But now with smart cameras and smartphones and tablets, I think it's part of this overall trend of the democratization of media. It doesn't matter whether it's photography, still photography, or music. You know, now equipment is in hand where you can make music as easy as professionals, and usually in a back room in a house. Film is the same way with digital movies and things like that. This sort of art form that was for connoisseurs has been really democratized.
Sure. I mean, I think you're right there. You've hit the nail on the head that there are these professional people that do it and earn a living from it, but if you want to, you can write a blog post, or you can be a bedroom journalist. Maybe that's not the right expression, but you can be a journalist and you can write about something, and you have the capacity for people to see your words and your text about whatever you want to write about. If you want to make a TV show or a movie or something like that, you can buy digital SLRs, which are very affordable. And actually, digital SLRs are being used in major Hollywood films and major TV programs.
That's amazing.
One episode of House was filmed entirely on a Nikon 5D Mark II, which is not a consumer-level camera, but it's affordable, whereas 10 years ago, a broadcast-quality camera, you wouldn't be able to afford that. As you say, you can make an album on a computer, and you can release music through the internet. And even if you'd make a little film, you can upload it to YouTube, and you've got the capacity for millions of people to see it and get the exposure that you couldn't get 10 years ago, for example. You're right. I mean, it's an incredible, fascinating world we live in.
This book, Snapshots, looks at how to take great pictures with basically telephones, smartphones, and various apps. And what's the first thing to keep in mind when you're switching from a camera to, say, a smartphone or any sort of device with a very tiny little lens? I guess it's to keep in mind the size of the lens. That changes a lot of things, doesn't it?
Well, the size of the lens does affect things. If you look at the back of your phone, the lens will be fractions of inches across, whereas you look at a digital SLR camera, it'll be a couple of inches across, but it's also the sensor in the phone and in the camera. The proper digital SLR camera is designed purely to take photos and to get the best quality, whereas a phone has to be so much more than just a camera. It has to be a communication device, you have to access the internet, you have to be able to listen to music. In fact, anything you can think of, you can mostly do now because of apps. But it's crammed into a lot more space, so obviously the technology is different. But I would say, for me, my whole ethos on photography is that a good photographer can take a good photo with a bad camera. I'm not saying that phones have bad cameras, because you can get amazing photos from there. So I think one of the things to bear in mind is that basic photography principles still stand, and a good photo is a good photo, whether it's taken on a smartphone or whether it's taken with a big plate camera. Good photography principles still stand, so still bear those in mind. That's my biggest thing, and my biggest tip is that, why are you taking the photo? What are you taking the photo of? What are you trying to say with it? In the same way that you'd think through those thought processes and those steps in when you're using a big camera.
Well, are there limitations to what a smartphone or, say, a tablet phone can do that we should
Definitely.
Be aware of?
The size of the sensor, as we've just discussed, is very small compared to a proper professional camera or a proper dedicated camera. So the quality of the photos is always going to be a little bit worse. As technology improves, qualities of photos get much better. But you've got to think about how it'll handle light, because at the end of the day, photography is just capturing light. So it's how it handles light. So different lighting conditions, and definitely darker lighting conditions. Phones are able to take photos in there, but you'll get something called digital noise, or it used to be called grain in the film era, but it's now noise. It's kind of little pixels and little dots in the darker areas of your image. So it does handle it very different. And also, you might have stuff like a shutter lag. So where you take a photo, let's say you want to take a photo of somebody jumping is a good example, and you press the shutter on your phone at the point that they reach the highest point in their jump. Well, what you might find is that by the time that digital lag comes into place, that you might get a shot of them just after they've landed, because there's that delay between pushing the shutter and your phone actually taking the photo. So the more you get to use your phone as a camera, the more you'll get to realize that what you might have to do is count them into the jump, and then when you say 3, 2, 1, jump, you push the shutter on 1, and then because of the lag and the shutter delay, you'll get them at the high point of the jump. So you get to know your camera more. You might realize that actually low light situations don't work. So we're in a low light situation. If I just move them over towards the window, move my subject over towards the window, I know that that's going to create a better photo. So just getting to know your camera. The more you shoot with a camera, whether it's a film camera, the digital SLR camera, whether it's a smartphone, the more you'll get to realize what its limitations are, and then how creative you can be and where its strengths lie as well.
Can the smartphones take as good as shots as a traditional SLR camera or a digital camera, for that matter, in the best conditions?
I would argue yes. I mean, it depends on your criteria of good photo. Technically and quality-wise, no, but you're able to capture just as good a photo and just as meaningful and an emotional photo with a smartphone as you are with a digital SLR. There's nothing saying that just because it's whatever camera it's taken on, it means that it's a worse photo. If you're in the right place at the right time and the only equipment that you've got on you is your smartphone, and that's the photo that's in front of you, and you take it on your smartphone, then of course it's going to be a much better picture than the photo that wasn't taken on your digital SLR that was back at home in its photography bag, or even on your back because it was too slow. A lot quicker to get your phone out to take a photo than it is to get the big camera out and focus and get the exposure, etc. So smartphones can take, or phones can take, just as good a photo as any other camera there is. There's a prize over here, it's called the National Portrait Prize in the UK, and it's a very prestigious prize for portrait photographers, and I went up to the exhibition last year, and I was really surprised to see that one of the photos that was entered and got through to the finalist was actually taken on an iPhone through an app called Hipstamatic. So from an artistic point of view, it was fully competing with photos that were taken on large format film cameras or medium format digital cameras. So the quality was different, but that didn't matter. It wasn't being judged on the quality, it was being judged on the artistic merit. So definitely on the artistic merit, any camera can take the best photo.
My guest today is Adam Bronckhorst. He is a professional photographer, author of several books on photography. His latest is titled Snapshots. It's a small format book telling folks how to take great pictures with smartphones and apps. And he's joining us today on Studio Tulsa. Well, this is one of the interesting things about using smartphones is the plethora of apps that are out there. And for me, I don't take a lot of pictures with my digital phone, but one of my great problems is where the shutter is located. It's very inconvenient, and I was just reading in the book about a little app that actually makes where you can touch any part of the screen and take the photo.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Apple had a saying the other year that there's an app for that. There's an app for that. And there really is. If the chance, if you can think of it, somebody else has thought of it and they've made an app for it. So there's absolutely, I mean, the possibilities are limitless. So you're right. It can be inconvenient where the shutter button is place to take the photo, but there are various apps that you can touch anywhere on the screen. There are various apps that you push the shutter and it will only take the photo when the phone's held steady. So if you suffer from shaky photos, that app may be able to help you. The book is meant to be a handy guide to photography, and it happens to be photography with a smartphone, but it can appeal to anyone with any camera, whether it's a film camera, a digital SLR camera, or whether it's a smartphone. I've tried to make it as fun and as simple as possible. It's not a technical how-to guide, but it does show you and it does talk about the different aspects of photography. So you have the taking the shot, you have the editing the shot, and you have the sharing the shot.
Yeah, as well as the various situations you're liable to encounter while shooting. Yeah.
Yes, I've tried to make it as varied as possible and to appeal to as many people as possible. So within that, it's not a question of this app does this and this is how to do it within this app. It's a question of if we look at something like black and white conversion, converting your photos into black and white. Here's some good examples of black and white photos. Here's what tends to work with black and white. Here's what you need to think when you're shooting black and white. Here's what it's trying to replicate. And here's a number of apps or the names of some apps to start off looking to convert to black and white. So it's not a technical thing, but there's so many things you can do with your phone and with photography and with apps. And I use it to take, sort of in the taking it further section, I have a model release form app on there. So when I'm doing my professional photo shoots and I've got people in there, instead of the old-fashioned way of having to print out a model release form, getting them to sign it, and then I come home, I scan it, and then I email it to them, I have an app on there that allows them to sign actually on the phone for me to take a photo of them, and I can email it straight to them and straight to me, so they've got a record and we've got a legal document. And Getty Images are actually they're allowing these forms now. There's other apps that can help tell you the sunrise times and sunsets and direction of sun. So professional photographers are using apps not to take photos but to help their photography in that way. But in the way that that's a high-end specified app, you can really get to anything within that. So if you're interested in, let's say, taking photos of your pets, there will be apps that will help with that.
Really? I mean, for various genres of photography, there are various apps?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, things are changing all the time. It's so hard to keep abreast and keep up with exactly what type of apps there are and what's out there at the moment. But yes, there are landscape apps. Landscape photo apps, there are architectural photography apps, there are macro photography apps, there'll be portrait photography apps, etc., etc. There'll be lots of different apps. Anything that will help you take photos, chances are there's an app for that.
Now, earlier you were talking about the finalists in the big film competition. It was using Hipstamatic. What is that, for example?
Oh, well, Hipstamatic it was a very popular app that allowed you to emulate and change the different film types and lens types that you had on your camera and just get a different effect and add a lot of people called it a vintage filter to their photos, but it was just something that would get you a very creative.
Yeah, it was
make your photos look very creative in a different way.
I was surprised that there are apps that make your digital photos look like a Polaroid Polaroid
well,
land camera.
When smartphone photography became very popular when it first came out, because the quality wasn't that good, I think a lot of apps came out that emulated the nostalgic feel of Polaroid films and vintage film, because it did improve the photos, it did improve the aesthetic look of them, and it helped to hide the graininess and the low quality of them. But actually, people are nostalgic. We love photos that look like we remember them, and that's what a lot of apps do. And there was a lot of complaints from people when it first came out, and professional photographers saying, "Oh, this new technology is making photos look like they were 20 years old." Well, actually, it got a lot of people into photography. So I think it's a fantastic thing.
Well, if you could, Adam, could you tell us some little tricks to make your smartphone or your tablet phone a little more versatile? I'm thinking of, you know, I've seen folks out in the national parks where they have a magnifying telephoto spotting glass or something like that, and they'll put their phones right up to it. Is that possible to take good telephoto pictures that way?
Definitely. There's a whole section in the book on accessories for your camera, and you'd be surprised at what is available, what you can get. You can get little lenses that are clipped to your smartphone's camera that allow you to take a fisheye lens, for example, to take super wide photos or to take macro photos. You can literally get fractions of an inch from whatever you're taking. In the book, there's some pictures that were taken of spiders that were only, I don't know, half an inch across, but really getting close in there. You can get different accessories for if you're, let's say you're doing a movie, you can get Steadicam accessories that hold the camera very steady. You can also get, or that last year, a company called Photo Jojo bought out an accessory where you could put a digital SLR lens and attach it to your iPhone. So if you can imagine walking around the park with an iPhone and a massive digital SLR lens on there, I mean, all of this is possible now. Again, it just it helps you to be more creative. There's different filters that give, I don't know, starry effects to it. And, you know, like when you look through a kaleidoscope, they give that type of effect as well. So there are lots of different accessories and lots of things to take things further with your photography to make it more creative. But what I would say is stick to the basics. Get the basics done first. Make sure you can take good photos in any situation. And once you've mastered taking great photos or fantastic photos with your smartphone, then look at developing it. Don't go straight into using all of these things. Don't become a jack of all trades. Like, concentrate on getting one good thing, and then once you've learned and mastered that, and that's the same with any kind of photography, whatever camera you're taking it with. But yeah, concentrate on one thing, get very good at that, master that, and then move on to the next thing. Otherwise, you'll never become outstanding.
Well, for those folks who are just learning how to use their smartphones or are taking pictures and want to make them a little bit better, what are some apps that can really help on the sort of basics, whether it be cropping or, you know, maybe color changes to make, you know, or to brighten or darken a particular image? Can you maybe talk about some of those apps?
Sure. Well, I won't go into too many apps because, as I said, things change so much that if I were to list off various apps, by the time that those people started to search for them, they'd be out of date. I will mention a couple, though. I mean, the first one that I've got to mention, if we talk about apps, is Instagram. It's the most popular app by far. It became very well known recently when Facebook bought it. But it's a fantastic app. It's the app that I use practically 99% of the time, just for fun shooting now. What I love about it is it's got the three stages that I need to do. It's got the taking of the photo within it, it's got the editing the photo, and it's got the sharing the photo all within its app. So an example of how great it was that 2 days ago, the Olympic torch, we've got the Olympics over in the UK starting in a couple of weeks' time, which we're very proud of, but the Olympic torch came through my hometown of Brighton. Now, they were leaving first thing in the morning, so I got out of bed before my family was up, and I went out and I drove because I really wanted to see it. And I was standing there with all the crowds, and I managed to take a photo of the torchbearer running past. And I took a photo, and literally within 10 seconds, I'd taken it, edited it, and then uploaded it. And I knew that when my family woke up, they could see exactly what I was doing when I was doing it. So it's very important that I think people share their photography and share what they're doing with their lives. I mean, I think that that's amazing that we can take those photos and people can see what we're doing as we're doing it. The old days of film, we had to wait for the film to be finished, and we had to take it down to the developers, we had to wait for it to be processed, we had to come back, and then we had to wait till we saw somebody maybe 6 months later and show them the picture. Digital photography, digital camera, we almost have to wait till our memory card's full or till we're back home in front of the computer. Uh-huh. And we we upload the pictures to our computer, then we edit them, and then we have to upload them to the website, and that might take a couple of hours, or even it's going to take half an hour at its quickest. So the fact that we can do this, this is why I love Instagram. I'd love people to follow me on Instagram as well. I'm Adam Bronkhorst on there. So people look at me, they can see what I'm doing, they can make a connection. I'd love that. So Instagram would be my top tip for looking at an app. If you want to take things further, I mean, there are various apps there. There's an app called Camera Plus, which practically does everything as well. It's a lot more complicated. Instagram's very simple, and I think it's great because it's simple, it's easy to use, whereas Camera Plus has got facilities to crop, to rotate, to convert to black and white, in the same way that something like Photoshop, which is a very well-known software on computers, but they've actually got apps for editing your photos on your phone. So those kind of things you can straighten, crop, rotate, flip, anything that you imagine with post-processing, you can do it on the phone in those apps. That's what I love about the smartphones, is in the palm of my hand, I've got a whole photography studio, I've got a whole editing suite, and I can upload the pictures, and my friends and family and followers and whatever can see the photos as I'm doing them. It's an amazing piece of kit.
What do you think of tablets as maybe being the next step, too? Because, you know, tablets, you have this bigger screen that you can follow as you're shooting, and it does videos very, very well. In fact, I've seen a number of journalistic enterprises where it's just taken on a tablet, sometimes on the end of a pole.
Well, actually, I put the iPhone on the end of a pole when it was a royal wedding the other year. I took a tripod and I managed to lift and I put one of those lenses we talked about, a fisheye lens that can attach to the camera, and I put the camera onto a tripod so it's 6 foot. I could hold it 6 foot above my head, and I used a certain app to allow me to do a self timer, so I could push the shutter and then it wouldn't take a photo for 5 seconds. But what helped with that app is that I could set it to take a number of photos. So I set it to take 5 photos. So I'd push the app, raise the pole 6 feet above my head, and it would take 5 photos. And I'd just twist the pole slightly, and then I could get a whole panoramic view of where we were standing in front of Buckingham Palace when the royal wedding was over here. In regards to tablets, I mean, they're already pushing the technology further forward, because Apple have released new Retina displays, which are a far superior quality screen. So that really does show up almost some of the shortcomings of the low-quality lenses and sensors that are coming out that are on smartphones. So these super high-quality screens, I think, will push the quality of cameras, whether it's in a tablet or whether it's in a phone. They'll push them, and they'll make them improve over the next couple of years, so they will really bring them up to scratch. I personally don't like taking photos on a tablet. I've got an iPad, but I just think it's a... From a usability point of view, it's a big clunky thing. Whenever I see somebody holding up an iPad and taking a photo, I think, oh, that's a bit quirky, that's a bit funny, it looks a bit strange. Whereas if they're holding up an iPhone, at least it looks like a camera shape and it's camera format. But I can understand that maybe somebody that hasn't got the best eyesight, having a much bigger screen would be a lot more beneficial. So in that respect, I can see it being something that works for them. I can also see people... in a few years' time, wirelessly transferring pictures as they're taking them, or video as they're taking them to a screen. So whether it's taken with a digital SLR, or you've got the iPhone there and it's transmitting the photos to your iPad that's in front of you, so you can see what's going on.
And you can edit it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. And, of course, also on smartphones, you have this thing called HDR, which is, again, that's another technique, too, which is sort of improves the dynamic range, I guess, of the colors in the photographs.
Yes, well, HDR stands for high dynamic range, and what it is with film cameras, the film had a lot more latitude of exposure. So if you think about how we see somebody, if somebody's standing in front of you and they've got sun shining right down on one side of their face, and their other side of the face is in shadow, our human eye sees it that both sides we can see them, that one isn't really high. One isn't really blown out and one isn't really dark. Our eyes have a lot more latitude. They can compensate for that, and we see that they're an even exposure, if you like. Film wasn't quite as good as the human eye, but it's a lot better than digital cameras that it had that latitude. Now, if you take that photo with a smartphone, with an iPhone, with an Android phone or whatever, the chances are that either the side of the face that's got the sun on it will be really blown out and will just be white, or the side of the face that's got the shadow on it will be dark. Maybe not as extreme, it won't be black, but it'll be dark. what HDR means that it takes three photos. It takes one for the highlight, one for the mid-range, and one for the shadows, and then uses algorithms and complicated programming computing to actually combine the photos and to get a more even exposure. You can get some HDR pictures which take it too far and look too unnatural for my liking. It's great. I'm hoping that technology will advance, but we almost don't need HDR because cameras will have the ability to take a lot better latitude and take a lot better photos and not have that extreme range of exposures within the photos. But the other thing that I don't like about HDR, or taking a picture with HDR, is that it does slow your picture taking down, because obviously the computer within your phone has to do those calculations, and it does take time for that to happen, so you might miss the next shot. That's my personal thought on HDR, though.
Now, as a professional photographer, I'm sure you're still using film at times. You're probably using a lot of digital SLRs. How often are you using smartphones and these new technologies in your work?
My professional work, it depends. I'm not taking photos strictly for paying clients with the phones. Uh-huh. I'd love to, if there's any paying clients out there that would love me to take photos. I've actually shot a wedding. I think I was the first photographer to shoot a paying client's wedding with an iPhone, and I was standing up in front of 100 people taking group photos and doing the signing of the register photo with an iPhone. But what I am using the iPhone for, I use an iPhone, so if I keep going on about iPhone, it's because that's what I relate to. But yeah, the book is based on Android phones and Windows phones. It's not meant to be specific to one genre of phones. It's all about camera. You're taking photos with your phones, whatever phone it is. But as I said, it can be related to any kind of camera that's digital SLR or film. But what I do use my iPhone for is to take photos of what I'm up to and share them and use it as almost as a marketing tool, so that people that follow my fan page on Facebook or follow me on Twitter or follow me on Instagram can see what I'm shooting, where I'm shooting it, what exhibitions I'm seeing, just keep abreast of what I'm doing. Whereas, again, 15 years ago, what we'd have to do is we'd have to send out, I don't know, a letter to people just to keep them informed. Or 5 years ago, we send out email newsletters every couple of months to keep people abreast of what we're up to. But now people can see, oh, look, here's behind the scenes of this shoot. Oh, look, he's shooting this band today. We might not see those photos for another couple of weeks because the client might not release them, but we know what he's doing. So as a marketing tool, it's absolutely fantastic.
Well, the name of the book is Snapshots, How to Take Great Pictures with Smartphones and Apps. Adam Bronckhorst, thanks very much for joining us.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Rich.
Adam Bronckhorst speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. The photographer is the author of the book Snapshots, How to Take Great Pictures with Smartphones and Apps. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.